Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Hope May. I'm the director of the Center for Professional and Personal Ethics at Central Michigan University, where I also teach philosophy. And joining me tonight is an Ethics Talk regular, Mr. Nicholas Rousseau, a senior majoring in English and philosophy.
Hey.
And also, Ginger, is that you on the line?
I'm trying to be on the line. Can you hear me?
Yes. So, great. So, both Ginger Campbell and Diane Jacobs are also joining us tonight. Very special guests. Thank you both for taking time out of your busy schedules to do tonight's show. So I just have a few words before we actually start going into the conversation. As I've mentioned, we've got two guests. We have Dr. Ginger Campbell and we have Diane Jacobs. And you may be familiar with Dr. Campbell because she has not one but two podcasts, the Brain Science Podcast and also a podcast called Books and Ideas. And Dr. Campbell, is there a sense that you have of which podcast is more popular? Are they equal in popularity or is one more popular than the other?
Well, the Brain Science Podcast is probably about 10 times as more It's 10 times as popular as Books and Ideas.
Okay. And you devote more time to it than Books and Ideas?
Yeah, I'm having a problem because I'm hearing what you said a few seconds ago on top.
Do you have your volume on your computer turned on?
Yeah. Well, I'm listening through Skype.
Oh, maybe that's part of the problem.
You want me to try calling back on cell phone?
Yeah, that might be better.
Okay.
Okay, so Okay, so you'll be back, and in the meantime, we'll talk to Diane. So we'll wait for your call. Okay, so Diane.
Hello.
Hi. So Diane, you work on one of Dr. Campbell's podcasts, which is the Brain Science Podcast. But can you explain what you do professionally? Because as we'll explain, you guys are doing this, quote, for fun.
Uh-huh.
But what is it that you do professionally?
Professionally, I'm a physiotherapist. I've been a physiotherapist for 40 years. Right now, I'm taking a little break from doing that and am taking a year off to write and do other projects.
And what is a physiotherapist?
What is a physiotherapist? Physiotherapist is a healthcare professional who helps people to rehab themselves into as close to normal as possible after some form of injury or trauma or someone who has a painful problem that they need some help with. It's pretty straightforward.
Okay, and as we'll discuss later, obviously I've let the cat out of the bag and said that Diane works with Ginger on the Brain Science Podcast, and so we will explain that. But I gather that you see a connection between what Ginger is doing on the Brain Science Podcast with your own work. Is that correct?
Well, if you work with human beings, you're working with their brains. And you don't see any way around that. So where it ended up with me was that was kind of a frontier that I hadn't quite got to yet in my life. And about 10 years ago, I finally realized that there was a lot of brain science going on and that I should know about it.
Okay.
And I started to learn.
Cool. So, Ginger, are you back on the line?
Yeah, I figured out that what was wrong was I was accidentally streaming you off of the Blog Talk radio show at the same time as talking to you on Skype, and they're out of phase by a few seconds, which was confusing my ears.
Yeah, there's a delay. Yeah, so definitely turn the Blog Talk radio thing off. And if you, we do have a call line. If you do decide to call in, the number is 646-727-3928. We will also ask you as a caller to do the same thing. If you're listening to us and you call in, you want to lower the volume down on your computer because we'll get some feedback. It'll be this weird delay thing. Okay, so anyway, Dr. Campbell, as I was saying, you do two podcasts. Your Brain Science podcast is the more popular one, and it is a podcast on neuroscience. And our show tonight is really not on neuroscience. If you want to learn about neuroscience, you want to listen to Dr. Campbell's podcast. It's excellent. Our show tonight is really on Dr. Campbell and also on Diane and the journey that Dr. Campbell has been on in creating the Brain Science podcast, how it's evolved, what it's done to her life, how it's changed her life. And we're focusing on this because we, on this show, have talked about a concept. I don't know if either of you are familiar with this concept called intrinsic motivation. Have either of you heard of that concept?
I really haven't.
Okay. Well, intrinsic motivation is basically engaging in an activity for its own sake. So it's an activity that you love to do. I know, Dr. Campbell, that you love to play tennis. So this is an example of an activity that you do for its own sake, for the pure joy and love of it. And I see, perhaps it's presumptuous for me to see this, but, you know, you can correct me if you think my presumption is incorrect, but I see in the time that you've put into the Brain Science podcast that you're really motivated by the sheer love of learning and learning about neuroscience and sharing that with other people. You do have a job. Right. Can you explain to the audience what you're paid to do?
I'm an emergency room physician in rural Alabama.
Okay. And so this is your quote-unquote day job, an ER doctor. And normally on your podcasts in which you have an interview, you ask the subject about how they became interested in their topic. And I was thinking about that with you, and I was thinking it's not really an appropriate question for you because you really have two jobs. So I do want to ask you first, though, how you did get interested in medicine, which is, you know, not really the focus of the show, but just to give an idea to the listener of how this has evolved for you, podcasting about neuroscience. So how is it that you became interested in medicine and came to the decision to go to medical school?
Well, in my late teenage years and early 20s, I was a Jehovah's Witness. And at about the age of 23, I left that sect. And I was kind of trying to figure out, at the time I was studying engineering in college, trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. I still cared about helping people, and I decided to go into medicine because that seemed like the best way to do that. Plus, it did involve I had discovered that physiology was a pretty interesting field. So I was interested in science, but I was also interested in the helping people aspect. I did actually intend to become a researcher, but discovered that I enjoyed patient care more.
Mm. So it's this combination of this desire to help people and also this interest that you had in physiology that sort of fueled your decision to go to medical school. Is that correct?
Yeah, I often say that it was kind of I had to find a way to an outlet for my missionary zeal that I, you know, it was no longer appropriate as, since I, you know, was no longer a Jehovah's Witness, but I still had that same kind of motivation.
Very cool. And so, as I said before, now that we've got your quote-unquote day job out of the way, we're going to move on to, you know, this the main topic of tonight's conversation, which is your journey as a podcaster and how you and Diane both exhibit intrinsically motivated activity. And since you guys are not totally familiar with the concept, I did want to play a clip that I think clearly illustrates it. The clip is actually coming from a book that was recently published by Chesley Sullenberger. Do you guys know who he is? He's the U.S. Airways pilot who landed the plane, the Miracle on the Hudson pilot.
Right.
I believe it was last January, a bunch of birds flew into the plane and destroyed both engines, and he miraculously landed the plane without really any critical injuries. But I want to play just about a two-minute clip from his book where I think he illustrates the concept of intrinsic motivation, doing something for its own sake, for the pure joy of it. So that's about a two-minute clip, and here it comes. It's from the book, The Highest Duty.
In recent years, I'll often come home from work weary. I've been gone for days. I may have traveled 12,000 miles. I've endured all sorts of weather or traffic delays. I'm ready for bed. A lot of wives ask, how was your day at the office? Their husbands talk about big sales they've made or deals they've closed. I've also had my good days at the office. One evening I came home, and Lori was standing in the kitchen. She asked how my day had gone. I began to tell her. I had piloted an Airbus A321 from Charlotte to San Francisco. It was one of those nights when there wasn't much traffic. Air traffic controllers didn't have to impose many constraints about altitude or speed. It was up to me how I wanted to travel the final 110 miles and how I would get from 38,000 feet down to the runway in San Francisco. It was an incredibly clear and gorgeous night. The air was smooth, and I could see the airport from 60 miles out. I started my descent at just the right distance so that the engines would be near idle thrust almost all the way in until just prior to landing. If I started down at the right place, I could avoid having to use the speed brakes, which cause a rumbling in the cabin when extended. To get it right, I'd need to perfectly manage the energy of the jet. It was a smooth, continuous descent, I told Lori. One gentle, slowly curving arc with a gradual deceleration of the airplane. The wheels touched the runway softly enough that the spoilers didn't deploy immediately because they didn't recognize that the wheels were on the ground. Lori was touched by my enthusiasm. She noticed that I was telling the story with real emotion. I'm glad, she said. And you know what, I told her? I'm guessing no one on the plane even noticed. Maybe some people sensed it was a smooth ride, but I'm sure they didn't think much about it. I was doing it for myself. Lori likes to say that I love the art of the airplane. She is right about that. The industry has changed, the job has changed, and I've changed too. But I still remember the passion that I hoped one day to feel when I was 5 years old. And on this night, I felt it.
Right, so it's this part in the clip where he says, I did this perfect landing. I don't think anybody really noticed, but I felt this joy that I felt when I was a child. Also, he had the liberty to basically land the plane that he wanted without the external constraints. And that's really, getting at the notion of intrinsic motivation and the kind of joy that it gives a person who's engaging in that type of activity. So, this leads us to the main part of the show, which is Dr. Campbell, or Ginger, if I may, May I call you Ginger?
Ginger's great.
Okay. So let's go back. You've been podcasting since 2006. And why? Like, what compelled you to do this, and where did this decision come from?
Well, the first time I heard some podcasts when they first got on iTunes in 2005, it was just one of those things. I just knew that I wanted to do it. Why? I was attracted to the community of podcasters and the idea of being some part of a community, and also had been wanting to do something on the internet, but I hadn't really enjoyed blogging, so it just seemed like a great opportunity. But I didn't really know what I wanted to podcast about. I didn't think I wanted to do medicine, because that would seem too much like a job. And so it took me a year to come up with the idea of the Brain Science Podcast. And it sort of came about by chance, because I had been on the side doing a lot of reading in philosophy, which had led me to the philosophy of mind, which had led me to back into reading about neuroscience for the first time in about 20 years. And I was listening to another podcast and did, like many people know, a book review for them. And when I did, it was on Jeff Hopkins' book On Intelligence. I realized, first of all, when I recorded that, when I was done, I got that same high that he described in the clip you just played, that almost like an adrenaline rush. So I was like, okay, this is it, and I can do this, because I realized there'd be no shortage of material. Neuroscience is in a very exciting time, and I didn't have to worry that I would be running out of ideas. And then I decided to start two shows, because I wanted to have a second show where I could talk about other things, because I'm interested in lots of things. And so my second show is my books and ideas. It's my outlet for everything else, as I always say.
And so I know that I said we wouldn't really be talking about neuroscience, but you just said I got the same high that Sullenberger got in that clip, and I know that in your shows you talk about the reward system a lot. And do you see any connection between that high that you felt, or can you give sort of a neuroscientific explanation of the high that you felt when you started to do that first review, and the neuroscientific information about the reward system?
Well, I don't think I can, because there's a lot of simplified descriptions of things like endorphins and brain opiates and things like that, and dopamine. But the problem is that at this point in time, we don't really know what circuits and what neurotransmitters are involved. And so people are making hypotheses that are not yet testable. And I rather focus on the stuff that we actually know at this point in time. So I really haven't tried to analyze it, to be honest.
Okay. But clearly you felt bliss doing it.
But I didn't feel any need to be able to answer the question, why did I feel that way?
Huh. And do you feel the need to answer that question now?
Not really.
Okay. Very interesting. So I'm gonna move it over to Nick, and he has some questions for you.
Yeah, I first want to start by asking. So you're kind of jumping into this new realm of podcasting. I was wondering if you could talk about just the experience of trying to understand how to become an efficient podcaster, and kind of what went into that preparation to finally getting a mastery of it. I guess was there a lot of time prep work involved in you understanding the internet usage?
Well, I think I understood the internet okay, but I had never done any radio or recording, so for that it was a totally starting from scratch sort of thing. The first time I tried to do a recording in GarageBand, it seemed so difficult, I was just about ready to give up. But then when I had the opportunity to make something for somebody else, I was able to get over that hump or the fear of the unknown, sort of, so to speak. But as far as prep goes, there was a lot of prep. Most of the prep, it was partly learning how to do the technical recording, but that was more of a learn as you go kind of thing. But I spent about 6 months from the time I came up with the idea for the Brain Science podcast to when I actually launched the first episode, working on getting my website up, deciding how I was going to create the website and all that kind of stuff, and learning how I would, you know, use the various services to generate my podcast feed and all that kind of stuff. Reading books, which at that time there was only a couple out there. There's more now. I was inspired by Mer Lafferty, one of the earliest podcasters, and so naturally I read her book. And I read Podcasting for Dummies. I'm actually a big fan of the Four Dummies books. But so I did a lot of preparing, so I didn't really jump in. And then as far as the recording, learning how to make things sound pretty decent, that actually you just have to do, which is easy for people that go back and listen to my first episodes. They can tell that there's some things you have to learn by doing.
Right, right. And so you took all this time prepping for this podcast. Would you classify that in the same class as getting the high that you got from actually that first experience you had described?
No, I would classify it more like when you are reading about a subject that you're really interested in, and so one book leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. It was just being immersed in the subject, that is something I really enjoy doing, but it doesn't usually have the same high. I mean, let's face it, the highs are relatively rare for everybody. I mean, I can name the times I felt that playing tennis, you know, probably on one hand, but that doesn't mean that I don't enjoy playing tennis most of the time, even on the days I don't have that.
Right. I guess I was just trying to I was expecting you to answer kind of along those lines. And I was just thinking about the necessary kind of drudgery that goes into actually building up to receive those few and far between highs. And I don't know, when you finally started podcasting, was it present then, just like a higher level of experience, knowing that you had put a lot of time into the website and to the excellence of what you were doing, to the mastery of it? I just think there's a lot to say about that. I don't know if you want to make any remarks. Nope.
I'm not really sure that I can answer that. I mean, I didn't feel like I was really being motivated by the fact that I'd had that high, other than the fact that it gave me, you know, the positive feedback that I was going to be doing something I would enjoy. But think about, you know, deciding to become a doctor, which is a lot more work than deciding to become a podcaster. And the reality is you don't get very many highs from being a doctor either, especially under the current circumstances.
But isn't it the, like, an anticipated high? Like, you're doing this because you tasted this pleasure and you know that, okay, you want to have that again. And so that's what's compelling you to go through, you know, the drudge work, whether it's becoming a doctor, right? Because going back to what you said before, you wanted to be a doctor because, one, you have this desire to help people, and, two, you found this interest in physiology. And so you perceive or you believe that, like, by becoming a doctor, you would be experiencing this pleasure. And that sort of, you know, that was leading you to do all of this drudge work that medical school entails, and likewise with building a podcast.
Well, I guess that might be true, but I don't think I would have been consciously aware of that motivation. I mean, I've always been pretty much of a goal-oriented person, and I can't say that every goal I've ever worked on involved a obvious high at the end.
Right. I just want to make a connection with Aristotle, who I know in some of your podcasts you talk about, like, automation and habits and so forth. And Aristotle actually says that habitual behavior itself has a type of pleasure to it. So it sounds like you're habitually goal-oriented, and there's like a type of pleasure to it, but it's not the type of high that, as you said, is few and far between, but it's like it's pleasure all along. It's just different degrees of it. There is actually a caller on the line. Are you comfortable taking a call?
Sure.
Okay, so let me just get the caller on the line. Caller, are you there?
Hello, it's 661.
Yep, 661. You are on Ethics Talk. Do you have a question for Dr. Campbell or for Diane?
I'm interested in, we've been doing apprentice teacher here on Blog Talk, and I was listening in to learn more about, how the Brain Science Podcast. I am on your Ethics Talk, cmichigan.edu. And I see a link there for Brain Science Podcast. So I'm just checking it out for the first time. It's great to hear about this. Now, this was set up as an iPhone app. It's now available through other formats. Is this I can just access online?
Are you talking about Brain Science Podcast?
Yes.
Okay.
You can listen to the episodes directly on the website if you want to. You don't have to use any of those other tools. If you any episode that you look at, you should see a link for listening.
Yeah,
and
if you just go into iTunes and type in Brain Science Podcast, and you can listen right onto iTunes. Or if you choose to listen on your iPhone with an app, you can do it that way.
You don't need the app. That's just a new thing, and that's why you see that on the front page, because that just launched.
That's Ginger being an entrepreneur.
I'm on a docartemus.com site, and when I clicked on community, I thought maybe you might have some sort of a forum on there. Or do you have another social forum that you use?
There should be a link to the discussion forum there, but there's also a fan page on Facebook that's got a lot more members than the discussion forum.
Okay.
I may not have added that to the community site yet. I may be behind on that page, to be honest with you. you're bringing me up to where I haven't been keeping up with everything on my website.
Hey, well, I found your Facebook page, so I'm adding that. You get a chance to take a look at Apprentice Teacher. We'd like to be on one of your podcasts at some point. Our shows are listened to by people all over the world, as I'm sure yours are. But we see Block Radio as a format for training podcasters.
Hmm. Okay, interesting. So. Yeah, there's definitely, and actually, that I appreciate your comments, and the other objective of this show, and I think we'll probably be moving into that second objective now, is not only to talk about intrinsic motivation and just doing things for the love of it, but also to talk about how podcasting and internet radio is extremely powerful, not only in community building, but also, dare I say, okay, Ginger, I'm going to make another like presumption about you, and just correct me if it's wrong. But is it presumptuous and incorrect for me to say that through podcasting, you think that you're like really realizing your calling? Do you see that as your calling to do this and? Be reading about books and communicating that with people, because it does seem to be aligned with your value that you mentioned in the beginning of like you want to help people. And do you see yourself as podcasting as maybe a more effective means by which to do that in a way that's more enjoyable to you than perhaps medicine is?
Well, I think the answer is yes. I discovered that podcasting allows me to do two things. One thing that I knew that I was good at that I enjoy in medicine, which is explaining things to people. And so podcasting started when I started out. What I was doing was taking books from other people and kind of discussing them or synthesizing them for my listeners. Then I started doing interviews, and I discovered that all the experience that I'd had as a physician had prepared me to do interviews, and I really enjoy the interviews, and I think they allow me to help other scientists to share their work in a way that people can understand maybe a little bit better. So I see podcasting as an outlet for being able to share ideas with other people. I wouldn't describe podcasting as a calling, because I honestly look at podcasting as a tool. But what it has done is allowed me an outlet for talents that I was only partially aware of.
But I do know that, like, you're just waiting to be discovered by NPR, aren't you?
Well, I've almost just about given up on being discovered by NPR. But,
oh, come on. Don't give up so easily. You should listen to some of our shows on determination and sticking to it. No,
I just think I'm going to go in other directions.
But anyway, caller, thank you so much for calling and for your insights. And, shoot us an email at ethicstalk, and we can discuss, talking about doing a show on helping people learn how to podcast and the power of it. So, okay?
Okay, I did have one other question. Do you usually have the chat room open?
It really does depend. We found that actually our attention spans are limited, and it's really hard for us to focus on the conversation and also do the chat room. So we've sort of been experimenting. Are you voting that we keep the chat room open? You like that idea?
I do, actually. That's usually where I engage the host before I call in. We've got over a dozen networks that we support here on Blog Talk.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your tip, and thanks so much for calling. And
we'll offering
be in touch.
Support.
Take care.
So, Ginger, you have two podcasts, and I'm aware that you also have different formats. Do you want to say a little bit about what different formats you have for your podcast? And if you want, I can flesh out what I mean by that.
No, I think I understand. I have two basic formats. One is to take a book or a subject and discuss it solo by myself. Sorry, didn't mean to be redundant. And the other is to do interviewing. When I started out, I was a little bit intimidated by the idea of interviewing, so my early shows tend to be of the first variety. Last year, I tried to split them about down the middle because I got feedback from people who didn't want me to give up the first format, even though they enjoyed the interviews. This year, since I've cut back the Brain Science podcast to once a month, I've gone almost exclusively to interviews. That's really sort of a selfish choice. It's not that it takes less prep, but it's a lot more fun to do an interview than it is to talk to myself.
Do you think that it like helps you understand the material better, or you get a different result from it, I guess, in the understanding realm?
Well, I usually think that I am prepared enough that I understand the material fairly well. I can think of a few exceptions to that, like when I interviewed Frank Wilczek, the Nobel physicist. He probably did help me understand things, at least for 5 minutes. It probably flitted out of my head after that. But so the way I do it is my goal, and the way I'm asking the questions is to help the guest bring out the key ideas that they've already communicated to me through their books or writings. However, I think one reason I enjoy doing the interviews is that they may say things that surprise me or give me more insight into their ideas. And I think that's one reason why I enjoy the interviews more.
Right. And so you're engaging this material by yourself. You have your perspective on it. And then so often is the case through discussion that I often realize I have a certain way of thinking about it. And then somebody will just bring in this new perspective. And all of a sudden my thoughts, my train of thought is on a totally different way than it would have been going. So I think there's a level of, I guess I'm asking if you agree with this, where creativity kind of flourishes when two perspectives are meeting on the same information but are going in different directions.
I think that makes sense. I'm not sure whether it's necessarily true for the kind of material that I generally cover, because if I'm talking about science, I'm trying to give the person a chance to communicate their scientific work. And I usually, my goal is not, you know, to get into a debate with them. So I think maybe just because of the nature of the material I usually cover, that might be less true than it might be for, say, the kind of, like, ethics talk would be, I would assume, something where there'd be a lot more diversity of opinion.
Right. And I think also, given the nature of what you're researching or what you're talking about, it's a little more empirical versus ethics, which, you know, I don't know, a little more abstract, I guess you could say.
Well, if I may also jump in, I think maybe, so if you prefer the interview format because it deepens your understanding, but also may I suggest that possibly you're preferring the interview format because there's something pleasurable, going back to pleasure in the reward system, about interacting with another human being about an idea.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's a lot more, I almost always enjoy the interviews. I don't enjoy the time I have to spend editing later, but I enjoy the interviews, and so it keeps me going.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it would get very tedious to keep on doing shows like the earliest ones that I did, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just to, I don't know if you saw the sort of logo for our show, but it is, the greatest good of man is daily to converse about virtue. And, you know, we are firm believers in the importance of dialogue about ideas and how it's not only pleasurable, but I would also say that it has practical effects. And I want to ask you whether, you know, you're doing of the brain science podcast. You know, you are an ER doctor, you know, that's your day job, if you will. but have you seen, like, an interaction between the work that you're doing on the quote unquote on the side with the brain science podcast and sort of like the two activities are actually helping each other and there's a synergistic effect and the brain science podcast is actually improving and heightening your perception and awareness as an ER doctor?
Yes, actually it's really made me much more aware of the various levels of communication that are going on between me and my patients, between me and my nurses, between the patients and the nurses, between the parents and the patients, all kinds of, I just see all this, you know, I see so many of the principles that we talk about on the Brain Science Podcast demonstrated, you know, in a real life situation all the time. I'm not sure that it's actually made me a better communicator, but it has made me more aware of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Going back to this this dialogue format, I was curious if you do, in your other podcast, Books and Ideas, if you do any dialogue format with that.
I do mostly. I've done mostly interviews on that show for longer than I've been doing interviews on the Brain Science Podcast. In fact, the very first interview I ever did was on Books and Ideas, and it happened because I reviewed a book called Generation by Matthew Cobbett about the 17th century Dutch scientists figuring out how reproduction works, and he happened to be Googling and saw my review back when I was blogging a box, and he sent me a message. And so I decided to, well, hey, I'll just invite him to be on. And That was the first time getting over the hump of being scared to do something. I mean, I was really intimidated by the idea of doing an interview, and he was a very gracious first guest. That's why I always like to give him credit. And again, it was one of those, once you do it, you realize, well, yeah, I can do that.
That's very cool. That's a great story. So I know that one of your favorite interviews, and it's also one of my favorite interviews that you've done, is with Robert Burton. You had two podcasts on his book on being certain. And he, in that book and also in other episodes that you've done, talks about the decision-making process and when decisions really begin and how decisions begin in the unconscious and so forth. And at one point in the show, he says something like, if you ask me when I started to write this book on being certain, I can tell you, like, when the conscious decision came to me, I wrote set on at the desk and whatnot, but when you ask me when it really began, I really can't answer that, because for all I know, it could have began when, you know, I wrote this paper that I found after my mother died, where I was talking about the exact same thing.
When he was a young man, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was like 17 or 18 or something like that. And I just found that so amazing. And I'm wondering whether in your own life, whether you see any sort of foreshadowing of when you were a younger woman, like doing something like this, or when, you know, I know, you know, we've talked about the conscious decision of when you decided to do the podcast a little while ago, but like going back to that lesson that we learned from the On Being Certain interview, can you like look back and to, you know, go further back and see any sort of foreshadowing for doing this?
Well, I've always been a ham. When I was in high school, I was on this Scholars Bowl team. You remember how they used to have the GE College Bowl and stuff like that?
Yeah, we used to have quiz bowls and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I was on the high school version of that, and at one point, a television crew came in and they for the local TV station, and they said, will it make us nervous if we take a, you know, make picture while you're doing this? And I said, well, I don't know. I've never been on TV before, but what I was really thinking was, no, that'd be really cool.
That's so interesting, because that's so not what I was expecting you to say. Especially like going back to your, you know, your motivation to go into to medicine, which is to help people. And what I think you're doing is, like, I think you're really helping people with this,
well,
in a way in which you're using this art, this skill of communicating and distilling complex ideas for people. Were you not doing
well?
That?
That's true. But I have to admit that it always just kind of surprises me when people send me emails and they'll say things like, I suffer from depression, and listening to you talk about how the brain works is really helping me to cope with it, and things like that. And I realize that the podcast is possibly having more impact on people's lives than I ever have as in my day-to-day work as a physician. And I just kind of go, huh. I mean, it just won't stick to my head. I mean, it just doesn't – I don't know how to describe it. I mean, I find it very rewarding, but it just seems, I don't know why, but it never ceases to surprise me.
It is amazing, isn't it? The internet itself is amazing, and that's actually, Diane, are you still with us?
Oh yeah,
you've been very quiet. So the internet is amazing. The internet has like made this conversation come about. So, Diane, how did you – you've never actually met Ginger, and is this the first time that you guys are actually speaking to each other?
This is the first time Ginger's ever heard my voice, I think.
Wow.
That's true.
Yeah. I've heard Ginger's voice, of course, a lot, because I listen to all her podcasts.
And so you are involved in the Brain Science Podcast, and what do you do for the Brain Science Podcast?
Well, I have to say my role is pretty, you know, modest. I don't do, I'm quite impressed with how the prodigious output of Ginger, frankly. Reading all those books, analyzing them, synthesizing them, interviewing people, learning how to podcast, it's just like boggling to me. It must take just a huge chunk of life to know how to do that and to be able to do that. And just the sheer intellectual capacity of digesting the material and then producing it in a new format is quite something. And, I admire that. I don't feel my role with Ginger's podcast is very big. It's quite tiny, really. I'm a supporter and a fan.
I think I'm going to have to toot her horn for her. Okay? First of all, she did the very first transcripts that were ever done because she volunteered to do them. And it got the ball rolling. And although we've gone on to actually pay somebody to do them on a regular basis, and that's taken that job away from her. If she hadn't volunteered to get started, I don't, you know when that would have happened. So she was an important stimulus there. And also she's helped me with the discussion forum. She helps keep track of what's going on there. It's not a very busy forum, but she does go there regularly, and I know that I can trust her when I'm at work and can't deal with something that I know that she's going to handle it for me. And so I know she'd be willing to do more things if I could just figure out a way to make better use of her talents.
Very cool. I'm Diane. So what compelled you to jump on this role and help Ginger along?
I'm interested in supporting intelligence.
What's that?
I said I'm interested in supporting intelligence. My own and anyone else's that seems to be going along in a direction that I can support. I don't know if that speaks to any kind of inner motivation or not. I just find it quite irresistible, and I feel compelled to try to improve the level of mentation in the planet. In whatever way I can. It's very tiny. It's just
I agree with Ginger. And you're not tooting your horn sufficiently. And
I thought of another contribution that Diane made. She has stimulated me to do some of the most challenging subjects that have been done on the show. For example, the wonderful interview last year with Seth Grant was all her idea.
Oh, I love Seth Grant.
That was just, I think, one of the best interviews ever, and I would have never even known who he was if she hadn't given me the lead.
That's true. Okay.
And I just want to say, Diane, you were saying something like, I don't know if this speaks to any sort of, like, motivation, this like, you feel compelled to support intelligence, but, you know, my area of interest is Aristotle and Aristotle's view of human flourishing and happiness, which we discuss repeatedly on this show, and intrinsic motivation is a big piece of what he thinks flourishing is. What he also says is that actually it's like contemplation, intelligence, and reflection is the highest good, like is the most pleasurable activity in which a human being can engage. And so, Diane, when like you witness Ginger displaying that, I would say it moves you. It moves
yes,
you
it
to act. And
absolutely.
So I just think that there's something very, very profound in that.
Stimulating.
Yes, I completely agree. And I also just want to touch back on the point of kind of using the internet virtuously and how this all came about, you know, just a matter of, Diane, you have this intrinsic, I would definitely say it's an intrinsic motivator to support intelligence. And so when you're on the internet, you listen to Ginger's podcast and realize that what she is doing is in the same intrinsic motivator that you have to support this intelligence. And so, again, you reach out to act, and through the medium of the internet, you are allowed to support that. And I just want to commend both of you for supporting intelligence, as I am intrinsically motivated to do the same.
Yes, I mean, really the same thing happened on our end.
Because,
you know, I mean, I'm listening to Ginger, and I was actually in a podcast where Ginger thanks Diane for doing the transcript. And so that moved me to contact Ginger, and also Ginger, as you know, I said Diane as well, because both of you are doing things that, quite frankly, move me and, you know, move us to actually have this show and have a conversation about the whole thing.
And I think what makes it, in part, so authentic is just knowing that there's no money involved. So there's nothing
yeah.
else but the activity that's there. I mean, that brings us to the nuts and bolts, you know.
Ginger does have a store, and I did.
No one ever buys anything there, but anyway.
Well, I did. I did buy your app for your iPhone. It's
Oh, that's cool. Yes.
Yeah,
that
it's the only app I own. That's it. Okay.
That's
plug
exciting.
The app real quick, because I want to know what it's about.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, why don't you talk about your app?
I want to say one other thing before we talk about the app. We need to give a shout-out to Lori Wilson. She's
okay.
the one that has done most of the transcripts. And
okay.
even though it's true she is paid to do it, she is a big fan of the show, and she does it partly because of that, and does beyond the Call of Duty. I mean, she does extra
mm-hmm.
things. I know she's not really charging me for when she makes them, so shout out to Lori. And, okay, the app. Okay, the app has three main features. First, I'm going to say you have to have an iPhone or an iPod Touch. I've already gotten messages. No, you can't use it on a BlackBerry. No, you can't use it on a Zoom. Sorry. But if you have an iPhone, what it does is it allows you to listen to any episode you want without downloading it. Now, you have to have a connection so that you can stream, but you don't have to download it onto your phone. It works really good on Wi-Fi. Secondly, and this is the thing that I've worked the hardest to make a reality, is you can read the transcripts right on your phone. This will work better for younger listeners than older listeners, because they start out kind of small looking. The third thing is that there are links right in the app so that you can send me email. There's a new voice line to call voicemail into, which is brand new, and if you push on that and you have an iPhone, it'll just go right to the phone and ring it for you. And so if you're listening to an episode and you want to tell me something before you forget, you just push that and do it, and I think that will give people an opportunity to give more feedback. And there's other links in there that are real easy to get to right within the app. So that's what it does right now. It also has background listening, so you can listen and then go off and read your email if you really believe in multitasking. But if you listen to my show, you know, I don't believe in multitasking. So the app is not free. It is $4.99. The money goes in a split between Apple, which is true for all apps. Every app in the store, Apple gets 30%. Of the other 70%, it's split even between me and Wizard Media, and Wizard Media wrote the app. So, you know, that seems pretty fair. So,
mm-hmm. Right, Wizard Media is they host your podcast, correct?
They host my audio files.
Okay, yeah,
they host my only the audio files, not the rest, but yeah, the audio files of the podcast, yes.
Okay. Cool. So
I think it's pretty cool.
There is one
for Books and Ideas also, but I'm not promoting it until next week, because basically, there's this thing that they're doing where they're going to be counting how many are sold in a week, and that week it counts from yesterday. And so I'm trying to get people to buy the Brain Science Podcast app this week. And
well,
then, next week I will be promoting the other one.
So if you feel, you know, if you want to support the Brain Science Podcast, buy the app. It's a mere $4.99. Great investment for all of the knowledge that you guys give us. So we have like 5 minutes left, and Ginger, I'm going to start with you. Within, 2 minutes, can you say what the Brain Science Podcast has given you?
It's given me an outlet for sharing ideas with others. It's given me a motivation to continue reading on a very fascinating area, and it's given me the opportunity to connect with people all over the world.
And I would say that all of those things are very pleasurable, and that the pleasure that you get from what it gives you reinforces the motivation to keep perfecting it as you've been doing. I see this amazing development from your first podcast, which is like 9 minutes long, to what you're doing now, and it's just very inspiring for us to see that, because we're trying to do the same thing. We haven't been on the air for a year. It'll be a year in January, but it's really, really inspiring to see the development and to see how you keep growing it, and through the contributions of people such as Diane. And so, Diane, what has your role in the Brain Science Podcast given you?
Well, it's given me a friendship with Ginger, an online friendship, and it has opened up my mind to many, many more minds. I mean, it's mm-hmm. like there's this communication channel, and I feel like I'm now hooked up mm-hmm. with, people like Koch and, Busaki and all of these people that I read, and it's just more intimate format, and I feel like I can get inside their concepts and their ideas about how the brain works more intimately than I would have been able to just by reading their book somehow. It's different hearing their voice and being able to relate to that. I don't know if I can explain that very well, but anyway, doesn't matter.
No, I think it actually goes back to the point that we were making before about this, interacting with another person about
with
an idea.
Person. Verbally hearing their voice, you get, I think you get a different part of the brain stimulated or something.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And the knowledge will clunk into place maybe more easily or something, slide into various other little nooks and crannies that there are there, but maybe would not have opened up to that before.
Mm-hmm.
So I find my own brain made more intelligent just by listening and being a fan and trying to help and by relating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's this combination of knowledge and community. That podcasting does and that the internet can offer, which I think relate to fundamental human needs and, the good
and
stuff.
Social needs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the good stuff. So we have 2 minutes remaining, and what I want to do is actually close out with the little promo, Ginger, that you have on your podcast. It's like a two-minute thing where you're talking about it, and I just want to close out with that so people get an idea of from that promo and the music and all of that. So that's how I'm going to end the show. And I thank both of you guys so much. It was awesome. And perhaps we could have another conversation again.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, guys. Take care and have a great evening.
Okay.
Bye.
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 Hi, I'm Dr. Ginger Campbell. I started the Brain Science Podcast in December 2006 with the tagline, "The show for everyone who has a brain," because you don't need a PhD to enjoy my podcast. All you need is curiosity about how our brains make us who we are. Have you ever wondered why people tend to worry more about airplane crashes and terrorist attacks than they do about car accidents? Even though auto accidents are much more common? The answer has to do with how our brains are wired. Recently, it has been discovered that the brain is more plastic than scientists once thought. But it turns out that while there are things about our brains that we can change through practice and learning new skills, there are also lots of things that are beyond our control. For example, we can't control intuition or gut feelings. The Brain Science Podcast is not a self-help show, but understanding how the brain works will give you useful insights into your own behavior and the behavior of others. On the show, I talk about the latest books about the brain, and I interview leading scientists. We have in-depth discussions that I hope will help to counteract the superficial coverage of the mainstream media. Of course, I would love to be discovered by NPR, but until then, you can find the Brain Science Podcast in iTunes and at brainsciencepodcast.com.